Okay, let's make a start. So, first of all, put your name on there. If there's any blanks, please leave a blank. Put on top of there, week three, tutorial two. I just want to go through a couple of things in the unit outline with you before we get started into the poetry. The first thing is that you have to have your URL up there. And someone this morning told me that the final list is up there, and that's not the final list, that's a mistake. I should have hidden it, it's from last year. There's no final list up there yet. I'll be composing the final list this week. So make sure you've posted your URL into the space provided in Leo. Has anybody not done that yet? You've all done it. Great. So the second thing is, well, your first blog is due this Friday, and the blog topics are up there. Anybody seen the blog topics yet? Yeah. You've seen them, you know where they are? Good. And then the next thing is that on the Wednesday, the 11th of September, we're going to the gallery. We're going to the Brett Whiteley Studio in the New South Wales Art Gallery at this lecture time on Wednesday morning. And you've got to pay $10 for that. And I've put a link in Leo, right at the top of Leo, where you pay that $10. So you'll pay that $10, will you not? Correct?
I'll pay $10?
Yes. Yeah. And put it in Leo, in the link there. It's to get you into the Brett Whiteley Studio and the Art Gallery, all right? The other thing is, this is the most important thing, that in that same week, on September the 13th, your first quiz is due. And the quiz is your final examination in this unit for the first 6 weeks. And there's another quiz at the end of the unit. So you've got to do well in that quiz. I want everybody to do well. I want everybody to get through. I want everybody to get a high distinction. You're not all going to get a high distinction, but I want you all to get a high distinction. So how are you going to get a high distinction? Well, first thing is, you've got to have your textbook, otherwise you are sunk. As I said in the lecture this morning, I am prohibited from handing material out in lectures or putting it onto Leo. So we've still got this handout from the week one, which I'm going to be using today. But there's stuff I talked about in the lecture today that you won't have access to unless you've got the textbook. Now, I've put three of my own textbooks into the library. So you know what you can do with those. Not pinch them. You're not allowed to pinch them. But you can do something else with them, if you wish, if you need to. I'm not going to tell you what it is. I don't want to break any laws. So they're there. All right. And Lauren, you got the wrong textbook there.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're carrying that huge monster around
that's
for.
That's what I have now. It has really weights.
Well, you obviously need to go to the gym more, and then you wouldn't need to carry that book around. Okay, so that's that said. So now the quiz, I'm being very hard on you. You're going to get six questions in the quiz, but you only do two of them. And which two, you do not know. It's going to be rotating. That's what a quiz does. So this is a way of, you know, ensuring that everybody who's attended and read all the stuff in the first 6 weeks is going to get a high distinction. As long as they can write modicly well, you know, reasonably well, they get a high distinction. If you've come and you haven't got your text and you haven't read anything, what can we do? So it's up to you. Up to you. Does that make sense? Is that fair? Somebody going to shoot me down and say you're a bastard? Oh, good. All right. So just work, because I really want you to get the stuff. I want you to do well. Okay, let's turn our attention. Last week, this tutorial, we actually spent time on the schoolboy. The other tutorial, we spent time on the tiger. So if you listen to today's tutorial, the first tutorial, we actually deal with the tiger again a little bit. So what I want to do today is I want to deal with two poems that give a broader insight into the difference in purpose behind the Songs of Innocence and the Songs of Experience. We looked last week at the two nurses' songs, which is one of the nicest and simplest ways into understanding what Blake means by the contrary states of the human soul. The two nurses inhabit, they embody those contrary states of the human soul. And if you missed out on last week's tutorial, go and have a listen to it. So today, we're actually going to look at the introduction to the two books, the introduction to the Song of Experience and the introduction to the Song of Innocence, the other way around. And both these poems give us a fairly dramatically contrasting insight into what is going on in these two works. Next week, which is our last week on the Songs of Innocence and Experience, next week we're going to deal with some of the major poems in the Songs of Innocence Experience that are most well known, like London, like The Poison Tree, The Human Abstract, and so on. Okay, just to repeat for the latecomers very quickly, your URLs are due today. Your first quiz is up in about 3 weeks' time, and if you don't have your textbook, you won't pass it. It's a final exam. You have to pay $10 into Leo at the link at the top to get it to the gallery. We're going there in week seven, so you have to pay that now. Pay it immediately. If you don't pay it now, you give me $100 next week. Okay, I'm joking. But I want you to pay it, because I've actually had to pay it myself. Had to pay up front, so you know I need your money. Anything else I said that anybody needs to know? Anything out here, go.
Just with the blogs, I just had a question with the word limit. The minimum written on the unit outline.
The minimum is written in the unit outline.
Yeah. In terms of like a word limit.
A maximum.
Are we quite lenient with that?
I'm lenient with that, but I can't read books, so you know, I mean, I think give yourself, you know, 50% over the limit would be reasonable. If you want to write more, that's fine, but I won't necessarily read it. If you, you know, if blogging is really important to you and you want to develop a fantastic blog site for the world to read, do it, go for it. But I will read probably a maximum of 350 words, because I've got about 90 blogs to read next week, so I can't spend too long on each one. Good. Any other questions? No other questions. Okay. Do you all have your handouts from last week? No? Some of you do, some of you don't. Anyway, there's a spare one. Give it back to me at the end if anybody wants to borrow it. We're going to look at the introduction to the Songs of Innocence, first of all, which is on page 11. And it shows us the illustrations. The illustrations are important. It's worth looking these up in the Blake archive. It's also worth looking up what there's in the closed reserve. You'll see there's a book called Blake's Illustrations with detailed descriptions and interpretations of how they relate to the poetry. And in our textbook here, on page 547, there's an article by Stephen Burrett called The Third Text of Blake's Illuminated Books. The third text is the text, there's the image, and the third text is what occurs between them. And there's an essay on how the meaning of Blake's poetry expands when you link the visual text with the written text. Okay, let's look at the introduction to the Songs of Innocence. So there's quite a few things I want you to look out for. I want you to be aware of the kind of language that he's using. And that means word choice, that means sound patterning, that means imagery. All these things come together to create a certain expressive purpose. What is he trying to? What is this poem trying to do? I want you to listen out for... Now, has this names list got everybody on it yet? Anybody not got their name on this list yet? Please put it in the right spot. I don't want to confuse you with Jacob Nyrie, all right? So put it at the top of the list. Top of the list. And then pass it around, because I think James over here hasn't got his name on yet either. You've got it on there? I want you to look out for whether there's... Who's speaking in this poem? It's not all so obvious when you drill down a little. Who's speaking in it? And I also want you to think about, are there any stages in it? Stages. What do I mean by stages? There's events in this poem. So there's language, there's speakers, there's stages. Here. So let's read the poem, and then I'm going to give you a little bit of time to think about it, and then we'll hear what people have to say. Piping down the valleys wild, piping songs of pleasant glee, on a cloud I saw a child, and he laughing said to me, "Pipe a song about a lamb." So I piped with merry cheer, "Piper, pipe that song again." So I piped, he wept to hear. "Drop thy pipe, thy happy pipe, sing thy songs of happy cheer." So I sung the same again, while he wept with joy to hear. "Piper, sit thee down and write in a book that all may read." So he vanished from my sight, and I plucked a hollow reed, and I made a rural pen, and I stained the water clear, and I wrote my happy songs every child may joy to hear. So read it again with these three things in mind. The language used, and that's a big question. Sound patterning, word choice, imagery, symbolism, repetition, all those sorts of things. Language. What clues does that give us to the intention and purpose of the poem? Second thing is, who's speaking? Are there more than one voice in this? Is there more than one voice in this poem? Thirdly, stages. Are there any stages expressed in this poem? And if so, why? And what purpose? All those comments will help us to come together into a clearer sense of what this introduction is trying to achieve. So go for it. Okay, so let's go and explore some of these three areas in the poem. Let's share our thoughts. Who would like to kick off with some observation? Yes, James.
In terms of structure, the rhyming starts with A-B-A-B, but then it goes to A-B-C-A for the rhyming of the word.
So, good. So, what does the rhyme serve in the poem? How do you see the rhyme functioning in terms of...
In terms of rhythm, I think it's the biggest function of the rhyme, just the way the poem reads.
Okay, so that's not really telling me yet how it functions, like... Rhyme helps the rhythm. It's still explaining one language form in terms of another form. But what is it producing in the poem in terms of the poem's impact, effect, meaning, emotions, the elements of content? You see, you're talking about form. I want you to make the link between the form and the content. So what is the content that is brought to life by the good observations you've made about the form?
The tractability of it all and the innocence of the scene.
Okay, that's not a bad comment, but it's a little bit vague, maybe the tranquility. So I think one can be a little more definite about the way that certain language patterns impact on the effect in the poem. So if you just hold that thought, let's hear Danielle, yeah?
In terms of the repetition of the word piping, I read it sort of as a symbol of the singing or... either singing or remembering.
Yep.
If you were to then take the idea of it being a symbol for singing, you could then link that up to the ABAB structure, where the structure is meant to mimic maybe the song that he's singing and how he's singing it.
Okay, that's very interesting. That's a nice, that's a clearer, sharper observation. That's good. Christella, you want to add to that?
Just with that, how Danielle said, it makes it like as if it's repeating the song.
Yep.
Makes it a bit more cheery as well. Which
cheery, good. Yep, makes it cheery,
yeah.
That's good.
Which I kind of gathered from what this whole poem was about, like spreading cheer.
Spreading cheer, lovely. And a very nice comment. Yep, somebody over here wanted to say something. Juliana, was it you?
I was just saying, it's like the piper is happy to do whatever the child says.
Yep.
So like, although he seems to be an adult, most children... Whatever, like if you were talking to a kid as a kid, you do whatever he says, if
that's
that makes sense.
Yep, it does.
But he's like an adult and he's happy to do that.
That's right.
So, yeah, just...
Good. And it reminds me a little bit of what we were saying about the nurse's song last week. The nurse lets the children do what they want and their sounds echoed through the whole world and the whole world is transformed through their song and their laughter. Beautiful. Yes, Michael?
I just found it interesting because at the start of the poem there's only one voice speaking and I feel that's the piper. But once it gets to about midway through, it's sort of as if they're having a conversation.
Great,
and
you picked it.
Yeah, and that links up with what James was saying with the form shifting and changing.
Yep, yep.
It's sort of as if the AB is one person speaking, the C is the second person,
nice.
And it goes back to
nice.
The first speaker.
Nice. I haven't explored that specifically, but if you're right, that's a good observation. Yep. Nadia.
In stanza two, the excitement the child feels about seeing a lamb. And it's also parallel to Christianity, down here.
Yep.
The Bible verse.
So good. So the piper is excited about its connection with the lamb. And of course, the lamb has the symbolism in it of the New Testament of Jesus and all his associations with the power and the importance of children. Mm-hmm. Unless you become as children, you shall never enter the kingdom of heaven from, Matthew. So, yeah. That's
innocence.
Sorry?
Innocence. Just pure innocence.
Yep.
Of the child just being the child.
That's right. And that's what's being kind of celebrated here. Lovely. Yes, Michael.
Just quickly off that, it sort of seems as if the child's sort of like an angelic figure.
Yes.
Because it states that he vanishes as well.
That's
so
right.
It's not explicitly stated that it's an actual child that he's talking to.
That's right.
It could be some sort of apparition.
That's
or
right.
Like...
That's right, and it was and it is because the story is told. Katrina, are you going
to
say something?
I was just add to Michael's. When I read this poem, after reading it a couple of times, I kind of picked up this image of a child's dream or
yes.
some sort of childhood. Just because in the first stanza it says Valley's Wild, and then the piper sees a child on a cloud.
Yep.
And then it mentions a lamb, and then it mentions a hollow reed rural hen. It's kind of very natural, and it's very connected to nature.
Beautiful. So you've connected up a whole lot of imagery there that connects this event to nature and various kind of... Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
So, go please, Danielle.
Just to build on the identity of the child in the poem as well, after reading a few times, I also took it as the piper, as a child, as if he's looking back on his old life, particularly in the second last stanza where... he states, "Piper sitting down and write in a book that all may read." I took that line, and you know, the idea of writing in a book that all may read. So he vanished from my sight. Kind of evokes the idea of writing it or recording it in memory.
Yes.
So that book is a symbol for his own memory.
Yep.
And remembrance, and then having him disappear is kind of like letting that thought sort of pass through.
Okay, that's lovely. Good. Go Ferdinand.
I got that. Maybe the reason why the piper listens to the child is because he seeks like spiritual presence.
Spiritual guidance, spiritual presence. Yeah, that's right. So there's a voice coming from somewhere else that's kind of leading him and guiding him, and he's listening to that.
But
what I was trying to say was that the voice is actually the voice of Blake's brother Robert, who died when he was 19. That's recorded, that Blake really felt that it was his brother Robert who came to him, visited him like in a child's voice and dictated to him that he should write these poems. So that's part of Blake's vision. Fantastic, we've got a lot out of that so far. Okay, one thing we have not really drilled down to yet is the stages. I mean, it's been talked about partially, but if you look here, you've got "So I pipe," and then "Drop thy pipe," and then "Sing thy songs," and then "Sit thee down and write in the book," and "Plucked a hollow reed," and then "Made a rural pen, stained the water clear, wrote my happy songs every child made here." What sort of stages are being expressed here in the poem? Want to say anything about that, Lauren? Any thoughts?
That he, stage-wise, he got... inspired, that was the first stage.
Yep, and what did he do with that inspiration? What was the first thing he did with it?
Went along with it.
Like, what went along in what way?
Like accepted the request.
Yeah, what was he using to go on? The what?
The pipe.
The pipe! Yes, you got it. I'm just asking you to be more literal. You always go into metaphorical, symbolic depths. Be more literal, the pipe. And what happens after the pipe?
Then he's motivated to write.
He's what? He's motivated to write. So drop the pipe. And well, actually, that's a further stage, isn't it? Because after the pipe, there's something in between. What's between the piping and the writing? Nope. Now, who's got it? Anyone help Lauren? Who can see it? Jacob, say it loudly.
No, he's singing.
He's singing. So, you know, if you've got a pipe in your mouth, you can't sing. You try and sing with the pipe in your mouth. So singing is something different. What's the difference between piping and singing? Nadia, you're a musician. Tell us the difference between piping and singing.
Well, a pipe, if you are piping, then you're like mumbling, you can't understand.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're singing, it's rhythmical, it's passionate, the lyrics are very meaningful.
Good, another level's come out, beautiful. Yeah. And what do you think when you move from singing to writing, Nairi?
You're able to express more of what
you're
trying to say.
Yeah, something else happens. Good. Katrina.
So in like those three stages that we've just identified as a class, in that first stage when he's using an instrument to express his feeling, he's not really putting words to how he's feeling. Then when he's writing, then when he's actually speaking it, he's actually formulating some definition to how he's feeling, and he's actually documenting how he's feeling.
You're right. Good. So it's a new stage, a broader stage, something you developed for the whole world to hear. Yes, Danielle.
I think the stages as well, as I think his thoughts sort of become a little bit more enunciated.
Yep.
As the piping sort of subsides and the written word comes out to play. So when he starts writing in the book, he's rather than sort of like almost a humming to himself at the beginning, I feel like there's sort of like a humming sort of
quality.
To the first few stanzas. By the time you get down to the end, he's making clear, you know,
Yeah.
Notes almost.
Yeah.
About his experiences, so he's. It's almost like piping is being used as just a sense of mumbling, thought process before you actually are able to convey those thoughts in a clear and concise manner.
Good. Okay. Excellent, Michael.
I just mentioned to Kat just then. It's sort of as if he's growing up. Like the stages that he's going through is. He has these feelings that he's expressing, but he doesn't know how to explicitly express them. Then he learns how to express those emotions, and then he takes it one step further by documenting them so that he can sort of like express them and then understand them as well.
Okay, beautiful. Okay, lovely. What about the two lines, and I made a rural pen and I stained the water clear, Sarah? Difficult lines.
It is.
Symbolism.
And I stained the water clear.
And what's a rural pen? Do you know the word rural? Not far away necessarily, but to do with what? If you say it's in the, if it's a rural, something rural, what does it mean?
Like away from.
Not only away from. Like, you know, the Philippines are away from Sydney.
And they're sort of dry?
Why dry?
Natural.
Rural is nature. A rural pen, I made a rural pen connected with nature. Yeah, good? Go. Anything else you want to say, Sarah?
I don't know, like, to me, I'd stay in the water clear, so to me, like, something about whatever he's saying, he's staining it, like, he's implementing it.
Imprinting it.
He's imprinting it so that everyone else can see.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's the word stained, there's clear, there's a little bit sort of ambiguity there in word terms of what they might mean. Katrina?
Just going off of that. So in that line where he says, and I stain the water clear, it's like just the person two ideas.
Yeah.
And he uses the same like type of technique again, and he's talking about in the third stanza, last line, he says, while wept with joy to hear. Again, there's just the present emotion.
Yeah,
so
that's
kind of
right.
Like saying he's accepting the harsh reality of life.
Yeah, wept joy to hear. And you were you with us last week when we talked about in Blake, in his poem, Auguries of Innocence? Remember that, Auguries of Innocence. He talks about joy. When he talks about human experience, he talks about joy and woe are woven fine, like in material, woven fine, woven together. And when this we rightly know, when we know that joy and woe are woven fine, through the world we safely go. Were you there when we talked about that?
I wasn't here last week, but I remember, I think you did the same poem in a different unit for...
This poem?
Yeah, I've heard the name before, from one of the other units.
Okay. I do the same poem in every unit.
Oh.
No, I don't, I'm joking.
Oh. No, because it sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think I did it in one of your second June units. I don't remember which one.
Okay. Well, it might have been 19th century literature, perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got Michael and then we've got... very sorry about this. Christella! And then we've got Jacob. So Michael first.
Just with the lion, and I stained the water clear.
Yeah.
Just building up what... Kat was saying, it's sort of like I see it as he's sort of got a renewal or rebirth, because to stain something is to give a color, or to like have it something that won't.
Wow. Okay. That's nice, and particularly since Blake was a watercolorist, often he probably had a strong sense of the way that color can add something when it goes into clear water.
Yeah, it's sort of as if he's saying like. I've had this sort of experience, but after witnessing or interacting with the child, he has a sort of new and profound
understanding.
Yeah.
Beautiful, fantastic. Yes, great. Christella.
Just kind of adding on to what Michael was saying,
I
kind of read that line as a hyperbole.
Yep.
So staying,
what's a hyperbole?
So over-exaggeration.
Yep.
So pretty much... the idea of staining and kind of leaving a mark on something is hard to get rid of.
but in this sense, he's saying that he's staying in the water, which is already presently clear.
Yep.
So from his experiences with the angel, it's kind of like a realization that he's sure of what he's experiencing now.
Right.
So
beautiful.
I just wanted to make that emphasis.
Beautiful. Fantastic. Yeah, good. Jacob.
I just think it's important to note that, like, he's literally plucked something from nature to then start writing. So
that's very important to notice, that he's plucked something from nature. Beautiful. Plucked something from nature. Yeah, fantastic. Okay, isn't it amazing what you can get out of a poem? We all put our heads together. It's fantastic. Because you look at this poem, first of all, you think, oh, it's a bit too simple. What the hell's in there? And now we've got a real sense of just the awe with which Blake kind of approached writing the Songs of Innocence and all the things that he wanted to put in there. And one thing I haven't mentioned that we could mention, and that actually James began mentioning and I rudely cut him off, is the fact that the rhymes and the rhythms and the repetitions in this, they give the whole thing its kind of life and vitality. If you hear it again, piping down the valleys wild, piping songs of pleasant glee, on a cloud I saw a child, and he laughing said to me, pipe a song about a lamb. So I piped with merry cheer. Piper, pipe that song again. So I piped, he wept to hear. Drop thy pipe, thy happy pipe. Sing thy songs of happy cheer. So I sung the same again, while he wept with joy to hear. Piper, sit thee down and write in a book that all may read. So he vanished from my sight, and I plucked a hollow reed, and I made a rural pen, and I stained the water clear, and I wrote my happy songs, every child may joy to hear. And there they are, here they are. But now we're going to turn attention to something very different and very dark. And, you know, while this is transparent poetry, and transparent, not really transparent, I mean, there's a lot in it. We've discovered that although the words are simple, there's a lot in it. But when we come to the introduction to the Songs of Experience, and in fact when we come to all of the Songs of Experience, we're moving into language which is very opposite to transparent. And what's that? What's the opposite to transparent?
Opaque.
Opaque. Well done, Michael. Opaque. So when we hear this, first of all, we're going to be blown away by our lack of comprehension of what's happening. So I'm going to read the poem now, and then you're going to read it again for a moment, and then we're going to go around the room. We might not get a chance for everybody, but we'll start with Nairi and make sure she doesn't miss out. Everybody's going to pick two lines, and you're going to say what those two lines mean for you. And now the Songs of Experience have got two poems as an introduction. It's called Introduction, and then it's called Earth's Answer. And you'll see when we read it through that Earth's Answer is really part of the first poem, because the first poem is like calling to Earth, and the second poem is Earth answering that call. Let's hear it. Songs of Experience. And look again, you've got similar image. You've got the man standing there, but this time the child is sitting on his head. Very interesting symbolism here. We can't go into that just now. And the title page, Songs of Experience, is two people mourning over two people who are dying there or dead there in looks like a mausoleum or something. So it's a very different world. Songs of Experience, Introduction. Everybody got the text in front of them? Anybody not got the text in front of them? Anybody not got the text in front of them? Great. Nia, you haven't got the text in front of you. But there's another one on the floor. You can borrow that one if you want.
Right.
Do you want to borrow it, Jacob?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
You must have very good eyesight.
It's actually my one. So.
Oh, it's your one. Okay. Let's go. Introduction. Hear the voice of the bard who present, past, and future sees, whose ears have heard the holy word that walked among the ancient trees, calling the lapsed soul and weeping in the evening dew that might control the starry pole and fall and light renew. O Earth, return. Arise from out the dewy grass. Night is worn and the morn rises from the slumberous mass. Turn away no more. Why wilt thou turn away? The starry floor, the watery shore is given thee till the break of day. Earth's answer. Earth raised up her head, From the darkness dread and drear her light fled, stony dread, and her locks covered with grey despair. Prisoned on watery shore, starry jealousy does keep my den, cold and hoar, weeping o'er, I hear the father of the ancient men. Selfish father of men, cruel, jealous, selfish fear, can delight chained in night the virgins of youth and morning here bear? Does spring hide its joy when buds and blossoms grow? Does the sower sow by night or the ploughman in darkness plough? Break this heavy chain that does freeze my bones around. Selfish, vain, eternal bane that free love with bondage bound. Okay, read it again. Look at the footnotes and choose the two lines that you want to speak about. It seems very opaque at the beginning, but I can guarantee that from my experience in the last tutorial, when people picked their two lines by the end of the session, we really knew what this poem was about.
Choose just one or one from each?
Just two lines. Two lines that are connected to each other. But I don't mind what you do, really. If you want, if you've got something else in mind, you do it. But you're not to work together, you work separately.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go. Let's go. Yes, Nairi.
Okay.
Which two have you chosen?
I've selected Calling the Lapsed Soul and Weeping in the Evening Dew. But before I...
Calling the Lapsed Soul and Weeping in the Evening Dew, yep.
Before I...
You're allowed to do whatever you want.
Yeah, okay.
You can even dance first if you like. Go.
Okay, so I just wanted to make a note of the difference in tune compared to the song.
The difference in tune.
In tune.
In tune. Yeah, good, that's a nice word. Go, tell us why. In what way is it a different tune?
Okay, so with the songs of experience in comparison to the songs of innocence,
yep.
The speaker of the poem, he basically speaks, he comes off as he's speaking as he's been hardened by his experiences of life.
Hardened.
Hardened.
Yep.
Keep doing this to me.
Well, because I'm trying to get it clear for everybody and for myself, and just interpreting what you're saying and have I got it clear.
Okay, cool. And he struggles to find salvation, whereas, which contradicts with the tune that's presented
yep.
in the Songs of Innocence.
Yep.
Yeah, and the reason why I've selected Calling the Lapsed Soul and Weeping in the Evening Dew, there's obviously so much biblical reference in the poem.
Yep.
So when he mentions lapsed soul, I feel as if he's referring to Adam and Eve.
Okay.
And then when he says, and weeping in the evening dew could be as in God weeps over the lapsed soul.
Okay.
So he'd be...
Beautiful. Lots of interesting ideas in what you said. Thank you, Nairi. That's lovely. Great. Drulena, your two lines. Don't tell me you've picked the same lines as her.
No, I didn't.
Very good.
I was a bit stuck in this poem.
Yep.
Just at the start of it, it's very, like you said, opaque, but... I feel like the bard...
So you're doing the first two lines.
I'll do the first two lines. Like, yep. he's more
read
of like...
Read the first two lines.
Hear the voice of the bard who present, past, and future sees.
Yep.
So I feel like he's like a voice of correction sort of thing.
And who's saying here? Who's actually speaking these words? Or is it the bard himself?
I feel like it's the bard. Yeah, the bard himself. Because the bard is like the messenger.
A bard is a poet with a very deep, profound meaning. The bards were the people who... It's like the wise men in Aboriginal tribes. The bard is someone who's got vision of something broader, but usually a poet.
Okay, well, I feel like he's kind of concerned with what's going on.
Yep.
Okay.
Concerned about what, do you think?
A human life.
Yep.
I guess, what's in it.
Okay, and what does the bard see? You've chosen the first two lines. What's special about the bard's vision?
He sees the past, present, and future.
Great. Lovely. Okay, let's move right on to Nia.
So I chose the O Earth, O Earth, return, arise from our dewy
grass. Yep.
And I guess with the repetition of O Earth and how they're saying return.
How who's saying? You're agreeing with Julena that it's the bard speaking.
Yeah.
Yep.
I kind of read it like they're wanting the
earth to... He's wanting.
He's wanting the
earth to awaken. Okay, good. He's wanting the earth to awaken.
Because he wants... So I kind of felt like the earth's asleep within the dewy grass.
Yep. Okay, great. Lovely. Fantastic. So it's only pieced together the narrative of this whole poem. Jacob.
I've gone the turn away no more, why would thou turn away? Sorry.
Yep.
And so it's...
So what's being said there by whom to whom?
So it's still the bard talking to the earth.
Yep.
And asking it pretty much not to like leave and kind of stay in darkness.
Turn away no more.
Like if you compare it to the song of innocence,
yep.
It's much... kind of brighter kind of tone.
Yes, that's
and
nice.
You get a sense that...
Tune, if you use Nairi's word. Tune and tune are not the same word, tone and tune, but they're similar. They've both got three letters the same. But what's the difference in meaning between tone and tune?
Just the way it sounds?
No.
No,
not quite. Is there a difference? Do you think there's a difference, Nairi, between tone and tune? Yes. What's the difference?
A vowel.
Well, that's right. We all agree on that. Anyway, let's not get too distracted. Keep going.
So it's pretty much, well, because it's the last stanza, it's like it's wrapping up the introduction.
Yep.
And it's like his final sort of plea to the earth not to like leave everyone in darkness, and to bring back the light.
Yep. The starry shore. Yeah. Bring back the light, the starry shore. What's the starry shore?
So it's
It's the starry floor. It's the starry floor.
So it'd be like the stars from above reflecting onto like the sea and the waters.
Well, are the stars a floor or a ceiling?
It's a matter of perspective.
Matter of perspective. As the footnote tells us, did you read the perspective? Footnote 8, whether the stars form a floor or a ceiling as the earth rotates is a matter of perspective. Better than the footnote writer. Good. So you've got this sense here of the end of the bard's attempt to persuade the earth to do something. Great. Yes.
Okay, so I chose the same two lines. So turn away no more, why wilt thou turn away?
Okay, great. So did you interpret them similar or different?
Different.
Okay, tell us.
The first thing that I did write, though, was in terms of perspective.
Yep.
It's a rhetorical question. So it's questioning the reader's thoughts about turning away and, like, pondering on their minds. It's also, like, an open-ended question, that why.
Why do you turn away?
Yeah.
It's actually not a question in the way it's written, but there's a question implied there. Could interpret it as a question.
Well, it can make you think deeply about life.
Yeah.
Experiences.
Sure.
And then it says no need to turn away. So that's basically saying that there's no need to turn away. Like, why are you turning away from?
From what?
From, I suppose, the speaker.
Who's offering what? What's the speaker offering? Do you think?
Insight?
Yeah, offering some hope, some change, something different. Good, beautiful.
Yeah.
Great. Sarah or Sarah?
Sarah.
Sarah.
I chose break this heavy chain that does freeze my bones beyond.
Right.
To me, I was reading it like it sounds like a battle cry, like before you know it. You're going to battle, you give them this prep talk.
Yep.
So to me, that's what it sounded like, you know, like, why this, why that. So
who's speaking here?
The bard?
Sorry?
The bard?
No. This is Earth's answer.
Okay. Yeah, this is Earth. Like,
this is Earth.
This. Yeah. So in this one, like, in reflection to the other one, they want to break the chain of, like, you know, stop me.
Who wants to break the chain?
Earth wants to stop being dead and start
That's right.
reflecting its true life.
So why is she saying this to the bard who said wake up and she's saying break the chains? How do we understand this conversation?
So if the bard is saying wake up and she's saying break it, so they have to stop doing something as well. So it's all in, like, it's a hand-in-hand motion. So
okay.
People in itself, like humans, need to stop. I don't know. They just need to change their ways in order for Earth to show its full potential.
Yep. Okay, good. So we haven't got time for everybody, but I want somebody here who's talked about the second part, who's talked about Earth's answer, for you to speak. Who's talked about Earth's answer? Go, Christella.
So I looked at break this heavy chain that does freeze my bones around.
Yep.
So
she or he, the earth?
She.
Yeah.
Is personified, obviously. So I felt feelings of constraint, like she was confined.
Earth feels confined and constrained, yes.
Yeah. And then the part where she says, freeze my brains around. So the idea of freezing, I got like a sense of maybe depression, because it's like very cold.
Yep.
And then, like, because of her depression and sadness, she's just had the inability to move. Which is kind of like ironic because Earth is supposed to be lively.
So Earth not listening to the bard's voice?
Mm-hmm.
Is Earth not listening to the bard? The boy bard is telling the Earth to wake up, and the Earth is not listening. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, I think so. That's what I'm getting.
What do you think James.
I agree with that because the lines I analysed were break this heavy chain, does freeze my bones around. It's as if he's trapped and he's trying to break free. And
she, Earth.
She, sorry,
yeah.
They're trying to break free, you know, find that love.
Okay, so that's the main thing. So we have to, you know, for next week to read, to try and understand why Earth is trapped. Blake is dramatizing Earth as trapped, and Blake is listening, the Earth is listening to the voice of the bard, but the voice of the bard is not getting through. The voice of the bard is calling the lapsed soul, but the Earth is not hearing what is being said. Read the poem again with that in mind, see if you can come clearer to that, because next week we're going to move on to some of the key poems in Experience that show this trapped nature of Earth. And particularly, say, in the poem, The Human Abstract, which I want to look at for definite next week. All right? And the conference, if you want to come to the conference in October, then take a flyer there. I'm really wanting students to come. I've made it free for students. You save yourself $169. Give me the $169 if you want. I won't take it. Please come to the conference. So, James, release yourself from Macca's or wherever you're working and come to the conference on October the 3rd and 4th. Do yourself a flavour. What was that from? Do yourself a flavour. That was from the advertising for the iMac back in about 1972. Remember the iMac was all coloured? Remember this big, big advertisement, do yourself a flavour. Apple had that logo. Bye-bye, folks. See you later.